Thank you for coming. Colleagues, the first order of business is that we need to bring a bill back from pretty much legislative outer space. So the chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended for immediate reconsideration of House Bill 2566. Is there any objection? Seeing no objection, so order. The rules are suspended. Representative Catridge.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I vote to send. I move we reconsider the vote by which we sent House Bill 2566 to Ways and Means.
Thank you, Representative Patridge. Representative Patridge has moved that we reconsider the vote by which we sent House Bill 2566 to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? If not, so ordered. The bill is back in the Budget Committee. We're going to open a work session on House Bill 2253A, and we will turn to our ever-ready staff to give us a synopsis of what this bill is about.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2253 is a fee bill for the Division of State Lands. this bill received a public hearing in the Natural Resource Subcommittee of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. It would increase a number of fees related to the Remove Fill program. Currently, the fee structure provides only about 12 to 15% of the costs of operating the program. With the increases in the proposed fee structure, the fees would cover approximately 25% of the program. This fee increase would reduce program reliance on the Common School Fund, therefore increasing the amount of money going to the Common School Fund and distributed to schools. These fees, my understanding, were last increased in 1989. And the fee increases are assumed to generate over $500,000 during the 2003-2005 biennium.
Representative Morgan?
I served on the subcommittee where this was considered as part of our budget deliberations for the agency, and there were a couple of issues. One of them is that the structure of the fee increase put a lot of burden on relatively small operators who may not have the ability to really effectively absorb the cost. And the other one was an issue around the agency implementing a work plan that they brought forward to streamline their processes, and a lot of issues around just the efficient operation of the agency. And it was the feeling of the subcommittee at that time that the fee increase be put off until the agency demonstrated progress on implementing their work plan, and that this be considered in the next biennium. The discussion around the structure of the fees was also a part of the discussion, and it's my understanding that the agency has done some work on restructuring the fees with that thought, the issues that were brought forward in the subcommittee in mind.
Thank you, Representative. We might want to call the agency up to tell us about the news. Come on up.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I lost the very last two words you said. So
we just thought you might want to come up and tell us why there's a need.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I am Jeanette Fullman, the Assistant Director for Administration and Finance at the Division of State Lands. This fee is, as you heard, has not been increased since 1989. It is the fee that we charge for permittees for the obtaining a permit under our removal fill permitting program. The fee currently covers only about 10 to 11% of the operating costs of the program. This increase would increase it to about 20%, 20 to 25% of the cost of the program. Anything that is not covered by the fees is taken out of the revenue stream that would otherwise go into the Common School Fund. We brought this is probably the third or fourth time since 1989 we have brought a bill to the legislature to increase these fees. And last session we brought the bill, and one of the things they told us was to, at that time, the bill just increased the fees across the board and did not change the structure of the fees. This bill also changes that structure to allocate the costs across more of the people who use the program. In the House Water Committee, the original bill had a provision to allow us to recover our costs for the big permittees, like, for example, a Hyundai plant. And because our maximum fee right now is about $600, that was a problem for the aggregate operators. So we worked with them and changed it so that we have incremental fees at the higher end to address their concerns. After we did that, they were taken care of. The miners, I think the Oregon miners also had some concerns that we addressed in the House Water Committee. And that's what was approved and passed out of the House Water Committee with the do pass recommendation. I'm going to let John talk to you a little bit more about the effects across the program on what the different fee structures would do.
Mr. Chair, John Lilly, Assistant Director for Policy and Planning for the Division of State Lands. This bill would restructure the way the fees are calibrated. Right now, they're divided between removals and fills, and no fees are charged for general authorizations, which make up the bulk of our probably 50% of the permits that we issue are these general authorizations, which are an expedited permit. Under the proposal before you, small operations that would be covered by general authorizations could be charged a maximum of $150, where right now they're not being charged anything. So what you have is you have an inequity, a system that's somewhat out of balance in terms of trying to finance it by the people, by the fees from folks who are using the service. In this case, the individual permit holders are carrying most of the program costs in regards to fees. In other words, they're the only ones contributing fees, whereas those which make up over 50% of the the permit recipients are paying nothing. In addition, there are a number of services that we provide at no cost, including pre-application conferences, wetland delineation and determination reviews, post-approval project, post-project monitoring, and consultation on when a permit is needed. In addition, we review somewhere between 400 and 500 local land use determinations a year to help private citizens find out whether or not their project would require a state or a federal permit. All of these things are done without cost to the applicant, and what we're asking for you to do today to approve under this measure is allow us to move forward with a fee that is more equitable than the current fee, which places the burden to pay fees primarily on those people getting an individual permit, while the folks which make up over 50 to 60% of the permits, pay nothing.
Any questions from the committee? Have you discussed all the fee increases with all the stakeholders?
Mr. Chair, to the best of my knowledge, we have. Aggregate, the farm community has been talked to. I would say that the agricultural community, at least from the Farm Bureau's perspective, has been difficult to support a fee increase of any kind. We've done our best to deal with those questions. Quite frankly, by and large, ag producers and their activities are for the most part exempt from regulation under this program. They do fall under regulation when they want to do stream bank erosion control projects, and that would be an instance when they would be regulated. The aggregate community we spoke to, the small placer miners we spoke to and made an amendment in the House Water Committee, was it? that where we made an amendment to accommodate their concerns and partially to accommodate a concern that the Farm Bureau had, although I don't think we've totally addressed all the Farm Bureau's concerns.
Anybody else? Thank you. Jim, did you want to say anything? No? Okay.
I'm going to recess the work session on House Bill 2253. And I think we'll talk with Rocco and a couple of other stakeholders since we had short notice on this particular work session, just to make sure that there aren't any glitches. And if you want to move on to the next bill, I'm happy to do that. Okay, we'll stand at ease until we bring staff in. We'll come back to order and we'll open a work session on Senate Joint Resolution 2A and House Bill 3670. Paul, you want to give us a little rundown on this bill?
Mr. Chair, the SJR 2A9 amendments replace the original SJR 2, and what they do is they establish an economic emergency fund that is distinct from the general fund. It does refer to monies appropriated to the fund and interest earnings from the fund. But the main source of revenue to the fund would be an appropriation to the fund an amount equal to 1% of the amount of revenue that is projected to be available to the general fund by the for the biennium. So the mechanism would be you would have a revenue projection that would be done at the close of session, and 1% of that revenue would then go to the emergency fund. It caps the fund at 10%. Earnings are retained in the fund up until the cap is reached. And once those that cap is reached, then the earnings are distributed back out for capital projects, and those are listed on page 2. Eligible capital projects for schools, community colleges, colleges and universities. Again, this allocation would not be made until the cap of 10% of the general fund is reached from these 1% appropriations per biennium. The access to the emergency fund requires a three-fourths vote of the members of each house of the assembly. That would be coupled with a finding that would set the stage for that approval. And the language actually on lines 16 through 22 on page 2 is identical to the language that you adopted for the Education Stability Fund. Actually, it's two of the three triggers that are in the Education Stability Fund now.
What's the third?
The third criteria is real specific to a period in which you're at near the end of a biennium and you're projecting the next biennium you're going to have revenue less than 2% of your appropriations of the current biennium. So that one is not included here. It includes the more general ones, the employment-related external economic conditions, and also the other one is revenue forecast more than 2% below the projection used for the close of session. Also point out, like, that as in the Education Stability Fund, the findings, the triggers, are not an and but an or. So either one of those would trigger the finding, and then that, you know, you remember the legislation you saw this session for the Education Stability Fund, you still had to get the three-fifths vote. In this case, you'd require a three-fourths vote once the finding's been made.
Colleagues, also before you is a copy of House Joint Resolution 33 from the 2001 session. It actually was a gotten stuff at one point of the Pinnacle Capital of Oregon bill. And it also, along with that, you'll see the vote in the House last session. It was 35-20, and it just ended up dying in the Senate. And, you know, it's interesting to read the whereas clauses. You know, specifically, the fourth whereas clause, whereas increasing taxes or fees is an impractical way of achieving stable essential government services during times of less economic growth. You know, it's kind of interesting, but the 2001 House, anyway, at least was attempting to prepare for bad economic times, and unfortunately the Senate stalled us out, and at least we would have had a economic emergency fund created. This, I think, is an attempt to do something substantive this session on, as it relates to reforming our system or adding stability. And it doesn't involve the political death nail of touching the people's kicker. It's currently in the Constitution, but it does require that the legislature save some of what comes in at a 1% rate. So it saves out of what we currently have, not out of what we could have, but certainly because of the provision in the kicker that would allow for the legislature to appropriate the money for other purposes, it would give you a place to put money if there ever were a kicker refund that came along that we thought was appropriate to either return and or save for a rainy day. This would give you a vehicle to do that. I think, as Paul mentioned, it is constitutional, and I think it's worth pursuing in the waning days of the session, based on the fact that we haven't done anything substantive as it relates to reforming our system. This is an opportunity to set something up for the future. Regardless of what system we have, you will have to have a some sort of a rainy day fund to create some stability in our funding for education and human services. Currently, we have the stability fund for education. So essentially, education will have an opportunity to double dip, as it were. They'll have that, and then this will come in behind it. But we would be available for all state services, not just for education, but we all know that education is a good portion of our general fund. So that's the interest behind it. It just so happened that we had SJR2 in the budget committee, and conveniently I became the chair. So so now we'll be moving all my priority bills. No, I don't have quite that latitude. But anyway, just wanted to bring this forward and take the temperature of the body. And it sounds like, from what I've seen so far, at least on the Republican side, that folks are interested in this issue. And so I want to expand that group and see if we can't do something substantive with legislation that we currently have. Susan, do you have a question? Representative Hansen has a question.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm obviously hadn't had a lot of time to digest this, but you were just walking through. Let me make a couple assumptions as I would understand this, and you can tell me if I'm wrong. For example, in this biennium, we would be required to be taking 100, and assuming that we have a $11.4 billion general fund budget, that we'd be putting $114 million into the rainy day fund.
You would be required to do that. If it was in the last biennium, you'd probably have just drained it. So, because the triggers would have triggered in our last biennium as of June 30 of this year.
Representative Hansen, I would add on the 11.4, those numbers are really with discretionary lottery and would include the carry forward. So this the wording on this is for revenue, general fund revenue projection. And kind of the running tab that I have at this point for closing session would be about 10.6 on general fund revenue. So if you applied it to the 0305 estimate, you'd have about $106 million that would go into the fund. But this, of course, would apply first. It would go to the general election in 04 and would first be applied to the 0507 budget. So it would probably be around $120 million.
Follow-up question. You mentioned a reference to the kicker, but I'm not seeing any reference to either kicker or projected in
right.
revenue. Would this siphon 1% off the kicker before?
Okay. This would take 1% of general fund revenues, so within your existing 100%. As you know, the kicker kicks in at 102% essentially of your revenue. So what you hadn't budgeted for. Leave the kicker intact so it doesn't mess with what the people voted in 2000. But it gives you a vehicle from which to put if the legislature decides that they want to keep part of the kicker right now, the only place that we have available to put it is essentially the programs. The argument has always been return it or spend it, and we didn't have a place to park it. So this gives you a constitutionally protected place to park money, and because of the kicker has a provision by which the legislature can override the return of the kicker, it gives you the opportunity for the argument, per se, that you could return 100% of a kicker, or you could save part of the kicker and be responsible within that revenue without getting into the argument of, I know there are folks who want to just wipe out the kicker law, and I understand why they want to do that, but I'm obviously not one of those folks. So I think this might be some potential middle ground.
So we could, a future legislature could, they'd be required to put the 1% in. And then at that point, if they chose, they could put a portion of all of the kicker or a portion of the kicker,
yep,
by the 3/5 majority on the
to override.
But it's two-thirds, isn't it, Paul?
Two-thirds to override on a one-time basis.
And actually, my recommendation for these amendments, based on conversations with the good representative from Medford, is that we change that to two-thirds as well, so these are consistent. Because I think this would have three-quarters, and I don't think three-quarters is necessary. Because I think if you trigger one of these triggers.
What's the economic stability fund? Is it two-thirds, or is it?
It's three-fifths.
Education stability fund?
Oh, we should probably do this the same thing.
But you're right. The kicker, to override the kicker is two-thirds, but to draw money out of the education stability fund is three-fifths.
Okay. It's just my feeling that you'd be better off with a veto-proof majority. If you're moving forward, I think it shows that you have bipartisan support to do it at two-thirds, where the way things are right now, it could be done with mostly a vote of one caucus of the legislature. So that's the thought about two-thirds. Other questions from the committee, Susan?
Are you ready for a motion, Mr. Chair?
We probably do need Paul's word.
I'm trying to think if we have the three. See if we have the three force referred to in any other places. We have it on line 23. You could conceptually amend the proposed appropriation is approved by amend that to two-thirds. I think that would be the only class.
What line is that on, Paul?
It's on page 2, line 23, section B there.
Mr. Chair, if you're ready for a motion, I would move that we conceptually amend the dash A9 amendments to SJR2 on page 2 of the bill, line 23, to delete 3/4 and substitute 2/3.
Representative Morgan has moved that we conceptually amend the dash 29 or SJR2 9A amendments on line 23. To read two-thirds on page 2, to read two-thirds instead of 3/4. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there objection? If not, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, I would move the dash A9 amendments as conceptually amended into SJR2.
Representative Morgan moves that we move the dash A9 amendments to SGR2
as conceptually
amended. Is there any discussion?
I'll be discussion or vote.
Any discussion? Is there an objection? Representative Hansen is a no. Objection.
Mr. Chair, just for the record, I'm providing a courtesy vote to the floor. I'm not sure how I'm going to vote on this when it reaches the floor.
Thank you, Representative Patridge. We'll note Representative Hansen's objection.
Can I just a courtesy objection? Because
yep.
I don't know.
Yeah, the amendments are
no.
The amendments are adopted. Representative Morgan.
I would move SJR2 as amended and conceptually amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Morgan has moved SJR2 A, or yeah, Representative 2. SJR 2, and the floor with a due pass recommendation as conceptually amended. Is there any discussion? And we'll take a roll call vote on that. Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Patridge.
Aye.
Representative Hansen.
No.
Representative Morgan.
Aye.
Chair Knoop.
Aye. Having received the required number of votes, SJR2A is moved to the floor for the pass recommendation, and I will carry the bill.
Thank you, committee. We'll close the work session on SGR 2 and open a work session on House. Oh, actually, we already have a work session open on House Bill 3670. And, Paul, this is because that's a constitutional referral that requires that we put it on the ballot. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
You want to tell us a little bit about that?
House Bill 3670 is the ballot title bill that would go with Senate Joint Resolution 2, and it would be consistent with the amendments that you have adopted. The one exception is on page 2, line 2, where the original 3670 refers to 0.5% of the money's projected. This would be changed to 1%. The one half of would be deleted, and the 1% would be substituted to make it consistent with the measure you just passed.
And we have a -1 amendment.
We have a -1 amendment to 3670. That's the one line amendment there that, that deletes that reference.
Mr. Chair, just for personal.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Is there anything in this that needs to be amended to reflect the change in the vote that's required?
That Mr. Chair, line 1, page 23, I believe, needs to be amended.
Yes. See any other changes that would be necessary? Anyone else? Representative Morgan, I would take a motion on conceptual
Chair,
amendment.
I would gladly offer a motion to conceptually amend House Bill 3670, page 1 of the bill, line 23, to take out 3/4 and insert 2/3.
Thank you. Representative Morgan has moved that we conceptually amend House Bill 3670, line first page, line 23, take out 3/4, insert 2/3. Is there a discussion? Representative Hansen.
Well, looking at on page 2, lines 8 and 7 and 8, seems a little broader than what we've done on page 2 of the bill. Unless I'm on the wrong one.
I think that, Mr. Chair, and
President,
I think that's just the interest earnings that are limited to those particular items.
That's correct. I think what this is saying is that the money would be available fund would be available for K-12 senior programs, mental health, or state police, but the interest earnings, once it gets to the 10% level, then would go specifically to K-12 community colleges and higher ed for, I believe, capital
constructional
expenditures, which I think, you know, is obviously has been a difficult issue for a lot of districts over the years. And, you know, if you don't start at some point, you never get there. So, but I, you know, I appreciate you bringing that to our attention because I think that's important that people understand that this can be used for basically the entire general fund. And those are, I think, some of the key programs that people in this body would put as priorities.
Mr. Chair.
We have discussion on the conceptual amendment. Any other discussion? Any objection to the conceptual amendment? Seeing none, it's adopted. Representative Morgan, we have a -1 amendment.
I would move the -1 amendments into House Bill 3670.
Representative Morgan moves the -1 amendments to House Bill 3670. Is there any objection?
Anybody in discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, so order. Representative Morgan.
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 3670 as amended and conceptually amended to the floor with the Chief Counsel's recommendation.
Representative Morgan has moved House Bill 3670 as conceptually amended with the dash one amendments to the floor with the Chief Counsel's recommendation. Is there any discussion? Take a roll call vote on that. Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Patrick.
Aye.
Representative Hanson.
No.
Representative Morgan.
Aye.
Chair Knope.
Aye. I'm going to receive the required number of votes. House Bill 3670, as conceptually amended and amended, is passed to the floor, and I will carry the bill. And we can close the work session on House Bill 3670. I believe that completes our agenda for today. Colleagues, we may, there may be a need to meet tomorrow, and for scheduling purposes, we'll contact you as early as possible once we have direction from the speaker. So thank you for your attendance today. I appreciate it, and treating the new chair easily.
Do you have any timeline window of opportunity when we might be meeting?
Do you have a recommendation?
Not at all.
It's not my preference to meet, but if it's necessary.
Well, afternoon would be easier.
Afternoon? Okay. We'll get to you as soon as possible if there is a need to meet. It's not my intent to meet, but if there is a need to meet, we will be contacting you by cell phone. Thank you. If there's nothing else, we'll get to the order. Committee's adjourned.